Now, for humanity itself, he tells us that there are also seven centers for humanity. The one representing the first one is, he says, is London, and that represents the fifth. And he talks about they have a soul and personality representation. Okay, so I won't go through all that, but we have London representing the fifth and seventh, New York representing the second and third rays, Tokyo representing the fourth, sixth, and fourth, and Geneva representing the first and second, and Darjeeling representing the second and fifth. And he says the sixth will manifest in the future in Africa. There will be a great center that will evolve there, and then the seventh will eventually manifest in Australia. So those are the seven centers that are representative of humanity. And humanity has not ended its progression, so we've only developed five centers that are representative of this spiritual energy. Okay, the next place the kingdoms manifest is in the planet itself. Make sure this still...
In the continents?
Yeah. So, the first, the lowest center in the planet itself would be what?
Africa.
What?
Africa. No?
No? Not a continent. We're not talking about continents.
Oh.
Talking about centers in the planet itself.
Centers in the planet?
In the planet
Antarctica.
Not continents. The core.
No, no, they're not continents.
No, the core. The core.
Yeah. No. The mineral kingdom. Okay. Well, the mineral kingdom is the lowest center on the planet, and it represents the base of the spine on the planet itself. And it's governed by rays 1 and 7. Then the second center,
vegetable.
Now you can guess it, okay. The vegetable. And this is associated with the solar plexus, also with the heart and throat and ray 4. The third?
The animals.
Animals?
Yeah.
And they're mainly on the sixth ray and mainly on the solar plexus. And you know how animals are, we think they're so cute and cuddly, and they influence our emotions a lot. We're very emotionally attached to them.
You said the mineral kingdom is at the base of the spine.
The vegetable kingdom is the solar plexus, and also influences the heart and the throat, which is interesting. Because you have many parts of the solar, of the vegetable kingdom that are very evolved. Flowers are very evolved vegetables, you know, and the most evolved are ones that give off beautiful perfumes. And that's like radiation for minerals. So the most evolved minerals give off radiation like uranium. The most evolved plants, their radiation is their perfumes that they give off.
Like the pitcher plants that are very carnivorous and they devise ways to eat critters?
Yeah, they're pretty evolved
Right. Pitcher plants are dangerous.
And then you have the weeds that nobody wants, and they're probably not nearly as evolved as like a beautiful flower. Yeah.
What's ray 5 again?
The rays.
Did you hear my question?
No, he didn't.
What's ray 5 again?
Oh, that's concrete knowledge and science. Yeah. Okay. The solar plexus, the animal is on solar plexus. He says the animal uses the solar plexus in the same way that a man uses his brain. And the heart has an influence. So The animal thinks from his, what we would consider our lower feelings. Okay, that's
instinct.
The way the animal thinks.
Or instinct.
Yeah. Okay, now the human kingdom.
Fourth.
Is...
Yeah, but how do the animals become radioactive? Are they the domestic animals?
Yeah, he talks about the domestic animals that actually represent the ajna center of the animal kingdom itself, because they're seeing beyond what regular animals can see because of their influence there. Okay.
And what about upper primates, like, or lower primates, I mean?
Yeah, there's a big difference in the evolution of the different animals. He doesn't go very much into them, but I can't think of an example of a radioactive animal outside of possibly if an animal gets to the point where he's evolving human characteristics.
What about the dolphin?
I would say that would be fairly radioactive.
What about dolphins?
Yeah, he doesn't say anything about dolphins, but dolphins are definitely at the end of animal evolution, very intelligent. Yeah.
And whales?
Whales could be considered radiant because they have a song that can be heard for hundreds of miles.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Yeah. Okay.
And they can be trained to discover underwater missiles.
Really?
That's what the Army uses them for, I guess.
That's dolphins. That's dolphins.
Whales, too. I found out.
I haven't heard about
that. That's something I just learned, too.
Yeah, and look at the sense of smell a dog has, for instance. It's amazing what we can smell. If somebody's cooking bacon in another room, you can smell it, and it's amazing the small number of molecules that would reach your nose to create that smell. Yet a dog can smell many times better than us. I think it's like a couple hundred times or something. It's just amazing what they can smell.
Well, how about sharks smelling blood in the water from miles away? How do they do that?
Yeah, it's amazing what the senses can do. Okay, the next one up is the human kingdom represents overall the throat. And the throat is mainly governed by the third ray, and it's influenced by the fourth. Now, the fifth kingdom, the kingdom that's above the human kingdom, what is that?
Kingdom of evolved souls.
Yeah, they're evolved souls. What are they called? The hierarchy. Right.
What is it?
The spiritual
hierarchy.
Right. And who's the head of that?
The Christ.
The Christ, right. The Christ is the head of the spiritual hierarchy, and the spiritual hierarchy represents the heart center of the earth.
Actually, it's the one who occupies the office of the Christ. Right.
Right. The entity, the Christ, represents the office, but the hierarchy as a whole represents the heart center. Not Jesus or Christ, but all of the hierarchy together represents the heart center of the planet. Okay?
And they're governed by Sennacherib.
No, they're governed by Jesus. By the Christ.
Right.
Yeah. But Sennacherib represents the head center, and that is Shambhala. And Shambhala is above the hierarchy, built of the matters of what he says is the second ether. So it's built of a very refined substance, and it's in the Himalayas somewhere.
It's above the Gobi Desert.
And we eventually will be able to see it. The advanced disciples will eventually be able to see Shambhala, but that's beyond our vision at the present time.
What center is it?
What?
What center is the Shambhala?
The head center.
The head center.
Yeah, the crown. Okay. So we have one left, which is the Ajna center, which is the most mysterious, like I say, of them all. So what would be the Ajna center, the third eye of the planet? We have the crown represented by Shambhala. We have the heart represented by the spiritual hierarchy.
Would that be the Nirmanakayas that represent they lie between Shambhala and hierarchy?
Exactly. Good memory there, Ed. So you have the Nirmanakayas, of which Buddha is one of them, and there's a number of these, and they have reached the sixth initiation and higher, these great entities. And they function between Shambhala and the hierarchy. They're like spiritual messengers that go in between the two kingdoms to bring knowledge and wisdom from one kingdom to another. So the Shambhala is able to assist the hierarchy through the Ajna Center, which is these Nirmanakayas.
I have a question, because I think Ed...
You have to speak louder, he can't hear you.
Ed said that the Shambhala is located where the Gobi Desert is, and advanced disciples will one day be able to see it.
Yeah.
Where is the spiritual hierarchy located? Is there an actual physical location on Earth?
They're not located in one spot, but they're all over the planet.
They're all over the planet?
Yeah.
They don't have an abode?
There's a handful live in the mountains of Tibet.
Right.
But they don't all live there. He talks about a European master and masters in different countries
in Egypt,
that they live in.
Because they were about to pack up and leave around 1942, I think, when they saw that we were losing the war. So they do have physical locations here on this planet.
Yeah.
So when they go back and forth, where are they going back and forth? They're going into Shambhala.
Well, they meet in Etheric, would be my guess. You know, they're able to leave their bodies and meet in different locations.
But they're not meeting in Shambhala. This was my
question. They don't meet in Shambhala.
Like the great conclave that's happening.
Shambhala is above their consciousness.
Oh.
Is it a real physical place?
Shambhala?
Yeah.
It's called physical because the Tibetan says that our physical bodies that we see is just a shadow of the true physical. He says the true physical is made of etheric matter, and there's various grades. He says Shambhala is the second ether, and that's what the city of Shambhala is made of. But we, in our condition, we can only see normally other physical things. We can't see the ethers. Now, I've shown you how to see the lower ethers. You do that exercise with your fingers. I've showed you that before, and you can see your etheric body, but that's what you see is made of the lower ethers. Now Shambhala is made of the higher ethers. It's a very refined energy.
So if somebody passes away, their spirit can go visit Shambhala?
No.
No, they go to the kingdom of the souls.
Right.
Okay, and that's around the fourth ether. You know, third or fourth ether is the highest they get.
From the bottom up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When we die, we go to abodes made of various orders of ethers.
According to our consciousness. Huh?
Yeah. And our soul, all of our souls abides in a much higher vibration than we are here, and sees with a much higher angle of vision. So when you die and you return to your soul, it'll be like waking up. Because think of yourself when you're in a dream, how limited you are. You don't know you're in a dream. You don't know that you can make decisions and change things. When you wake up, you are in a higher state of consciousness than you were in the dream. Okay, you're very much limited in the dream compared to being awake. It'll be the same thing when we die, and it's like an awakening. You know, right after death, people of a lower vibration can sometimes get stuck in the lower astrals, but eventually they go back to their souls, and when they return to their souls, it'll be like waking up. Now, the more advanced people will return to their souls right away, and it'll be like waking up and having more ability to perceive reality than you did when we are here. And in this reality, it's compared to a sleep.
So it's higher than Shambhala?
No. No. Where you go after death is lower than Shambhala.
So why do you call Shambhala the second ether? And
after death, you go to the third and fourth ethers.
And Shambhala is the second, so yeah. Second is lower.
No, the lowest is seventh.
That's high.
Yeah, the highest is one. Yeah, you got it reversed there.
You're
yeah.
in the seventh.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is the seventh? What?
No, inverted.
The ether we can see between the thumb, is it the seventh?
Probably the fourth, because the physical matter is compared to the seventh. Mm. Okay, water is compared to the sixth, air is compared to the fifth, and then you get to the fourth, and that's what you see there. Mm-hmm. Okay, would be the fourth ether. Mm-hmm. Okay.
The prana that comes from the sun, is that what you're referring to?
No, but that stimulates the ethers. I don't know if prana would be classified as the ether itself, but it stimulates, gives energies to the ethers. Okay.
When you lay on the beach in the summer and have like a 10-mile stare, you can see those little fireflies of prana.
Yeah.
I see that.
You do that all the time.
I see that.
You look like little spermies.
Yeah.
Why? Like
they
that?
Do. They look like they're creative. Particles.
I thought those were just artifacts in your eyes.
Kind of like fireflies, oh. Yeah.
Okay, it's a quarter after, so let's dismiss, and we'll come back and work on this.